Hello, everyone. You're listening to Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. I'm Barbara Lanhard, your host and poet in residence. Hey, the table is set. Come on in. Join me. How about some tea or coffee? Settle in for some poetry and prose. My memoir today is on the topic of kindness, a fitting discussion for February, the month of love. Kindness, the state of love, benevolence, compassion, grace, mercy, patience, service, goodwill. It's the antithesis of indifference, callousness, and cruelty, the stuff of bullies, which I'll address in this podcast. According to John O'Donohue, the state and vibration of kindness is inherent to us. He says, there is a kindness that dwells deep down in things. It presides everywhere, often in the places we least expect. The world can be harsh and negative, but if we remain generous and patient, kindness inevitably reveals itself. Something deep in the human soul seems to depend on the presence of kindness. Something instinctive in us expects it, and once we sense it, we are able to trust and open ourselves. He wrote Benedictus and to bless the space between us. We may not recognize the potential that O'Donohue describes because we are so caught up in fear, entangled in contentious interactions, like the animosity that is seen today on social media. I think it brings out the inner bully, the critic, the assassin. How can we recognize and nurture kindness? How can we combat the bully in ourselves and others? Emily Dickinson's poem, If I Could Stop One Heart From Breaking, teaches that our life purpose is to be loving. And you can find this poem on poemhunter.com and other places online. Emily Dickinson. If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain. If I can erase one life the aching, or cool one pain, or help one fainting robin unto his nest again, I shall not live in vain. I think Jimmy Carter is a good example of someone who exemplifies kindness and compassion. While in office, he promoted peace and understanding, but he was ridiculed a lot because he was considered weak and ineffectual. I don't know if we should teach our children that being compassionate is weak and ineffectual, rather than build border walls and cages. Carter builds houses for Habitat for Humanity. I think he shows one should never mistake kindness for weakness, for it is in the moments that we apply kindness that our strength is revealed. In fact, being kind means to loan others your strength rather than reminding them of their weaknesses. A famous contemporary poet, Naomi Shihab Nye, wrote a powerful poem on kindness. You can find her videos of her reading this poem online on YouTube. The poem itself can be found in her book, Words Under the Words, Selected Poems, copyright 1995, and on poets.org. Kindness by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you show kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at the bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. What is it we need to let go of with kindness? Ego? Sorrow? In my reading of the poem, it's ego, I think. What you hold in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, must be released as a part of becoming more empathetic to others' suffering. And why? Ego is the creator of fear, the primordial part of our makeup that defends the tribe and the teachings of the tribe. The tribe is a social or a cultural group. It could be a subcultural group or a clique, a very small group, sharing the same social, economic, political, religious laws, blood ties, language, and so on. These characteristics establish group identity and even safety. Although there are many benefits of belonging to a group, I think there's a dark side to consider. Bear with me. I'm going to explore the shadow side of tribe, especially bullying. And I'll bring the discussion back to hope, I promise. Our world offers a diversity of groups or tribes, as I said, and the principles of each group differs from other groups. If we are rigid and unwilling to accept differences, we may become possessive of our resources and suspicious of the foreigner, making the foreigner an outcast. My following poem depicts humanity's fear-based dependence on tribe. We hoard our lush resources and wall off the other, those who we perceive as threats. As well, we do not know how to respond to others' pain, so we deny our fear and shield our eyes. The name of my poem is Cocoon Street, Anywhere, USA. On our side of the fence, we have no want. The elderly pin oaks sprawl their limbs like warm arms, making shade and silence. Their wide berth absorbs the sounds of sirens and screams. Embrace us for wind. We have our food for winter and a garden plot. On our side of the fence, we have no worries. We sip tea by the azaleas and feed critters seeds. The ivy is lush, but daffodils still find space. The house is warmed as though the sun were ours. Our goods are sorted and stored, the dishes washed, the children fed, the pies baked, the beds made. On our side of the fence, we have no threats. no wars, no refugees, no homeless, no storms, flood, or fires. Our creek is free of oil. Our birds soar. Our bounty is pure. On our side of the fence, we have no fears. On our side of the fence, we have no eyes. We have no eyes. Granted, protecting the group has enabled humans to survive over the eons. Because of the competition among human groups to prevail, fear and sorrow set in. The fear of being wrong, of lacking abundance, and of feeling weak and ineffectual creates animosity, violence, and war. A vicious cycle of violence ensues as we defend our principles, however we define them, and thus our honor. The adherence to tribe can also be seen in the form of cliques, smaller social groups based on common bonds. On the playground and at any school gathering, for example, your children may be part of a clique or unable to find a group open to new members. Some cliques are friendly and some are territorial. When I was growing up, my family moved often because my dad was a minister looking for larger churches to support his growing family of seven children. As the new kid, I had trouble breaking into established groups at school. Maybe the teasing and bullying that resulted was intended to test me as a potential member or victim outsider. The smallest and most vulnerable, the new kids, the strangers, are easy targets for mean, marauding gangs of kids, both boys and girls, on the playgrounds, at least in the places I lived when I was growing up. I was stabbed with a pencil, kicked while waiting in line to go back to class, and called names. My maiden name was Harris, so I was called Harry Ass. I was taunted, mocked, and insulted. I watched kids bully others as well. I remember a sweet guy who had big ears. He was bullied to tears, and the midpoint of his upper lip would lengthen when he cried and curl over his lower lip. That made the bullies turn into rabid dogs. I think about that poor kid a lot, even to this day. Oh yes, I became a whistleblower, reporting the abuse caused by bullies, not just to myself, but to others. And teachers called me a tattletale. You're a tattletale. Do they still do that? I think many schools are now addressing the problem with bullies because of gun violence. However, in my day as a grade school kid, I was told I needed a thicker skin. I was the problem, not the bullies. Bullying continues today, owing to the anonymity of social media. People bully by demeaning people, name-calling, dismissing, disrespecting, and dominating anyone or group who doesn't fit in with their tribe. The victim is perceived as weak due to size, gender, sexual orientation, race, and many other factors. I hear more and more cases of bullied children committing suicide because of persistent bullying on social media. Now this is a trend. According to bullyingstatistics.org, quote, suicide is the leading death among young people, resulting in 4,400 deaths per year, according to the CDC. Bully victims are between 2 to 9 times more likely to commit suicide than non-victims. And 100,000 kids stay home from school daily out of fear of bullying. I found a number of sites online with poems written by kids about bullying. You can go to Family Friend Poems, PoetrySoup.com, Power Poetry, All Poetry, and Poetry or Poem Hunter. This means poetry writing is an outlet for kids suffering PTSD after bullying. Bullyingstatistics.com also reports that bullied girls who are 10 to 14 years old are at an even higher risk for suicide. Here's a heart-wrenching poem written by a 14-year-old girl from the UK named Izzy Dix shortly before she killed herself in 2013 after months of being bullied and facing cruel taunts by internet trolls on ask.fm, which her mother demanded to be shut down. This Latvian-based site had been linked to 10 other teen suicides at the time. This is Izzy Dix's poem, I Give Up. I arrive, happy and fresh, ready and excited, to celebrate the goodness. I'm eager and keen to have a good time. As I smile from the bubbles of anticipation whizzing around my stomach, I begin to see the crowd. I see more people. Many are happy and joyful. They're there like me to celebrate. I smile at them and say hello to the many faces I see. They look shocked and surprised to see me, and I question their judgmental glares as I wonder, what have I done wrong? I see their drinks swilling in their fingers as their backs begin to face me. I try to edge my way back into the circle of giggles and talking, and they push me away. I stand still, my eyes glazed and absent. Suddenly they call me over. I think, yes, they've noticed me, but then it begins. They start to ask questions as to why I am there. They begin to tell me that nobody wants me there. They tell me to leave and that I am not wanted, not there, not anywhere. My heart, my head, my body, numb. I feel pricks of stinging begin to pinch my eyes as cheeks begin to burn. Don't let them see you. Don't show them that you're weakened by their remarks. Stay strong, I think, but it's too late. My palms clammy, my cheeks streaming, my neck sweating. I walk quickly away from the chanting and laughing, my vision spinning, my heart beginning to break. I look down and walk, my eyes drowning in a sea of emotion, another piece of me chiseled away by their cruel remarks and perceptions. I give up. This poem can be found in the Daily Mail online, Izzy Dix's heartbreaking poem about bullying shortly before her death. She had just returned from a music festival where the latest case of bullying occurred. Please check out bullyingstatistics.com for a great deal more information on children's suicide due to bullying. And here's the hotline number, 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. When I was bullied, I cried a lot in my mother's arms. Although suicide was not on my mind, I battled depression and anger. I finally reached my wit's end with a bully who would physically attack me without provocation. I kicked back and even engaged in bloody, eye-gouging, hand-to-hand combat with the girl in her front yard. We fell to the ground, pulling hair out and ripping each other's clothing. I prevailed, the smallest in the class. Later, the girl and her mother showed up at our door with a new blouse for me and an apology. I was grateful for the forgiveness and compassion that ensued. The root of the words compassion and mercy mean womb in Hebrew. The womb is the home for the baby for the first 9 months. The root meaning is protection from harm. Thus, the womb is the safest place for life and the spiritual root of compassion and mercy. When we are born, we don't view the world we see out of eyes that seek status and monetary success, fame, popularity, acceptance. We learn these precepts from our tribe. We lose that root to our sense of compassion and mercy because of our fear that we don't belong, that we will fail to live up to the expectations of the group and that we are perceived as losers. This begins a cycle of abuse and torment in all areas of society, family, school, work, government, and world. When the stakes are high, the bullying is intense. We become what we hate. The abused become the abusers. We grapple like balls of snakes in a hypernaculum. We vie for power, define our territory, and defend our mate's home and hearth at any cost, including integrity. All great works of poetry and literature are based on themes of fear, loss, shame, guilt, pain, abuse, sorrow, and grief. Art speaks to the human condition. It may be why we are here, to do battle, to prevail over adversity, to find ourselves, who we really are, our power, our tough skin, our worth. Still, it is a harsh, violent, cruel world, and some don't make it. E.E. Cummings said, "It takes courage to grow up and become who you really are." Who are we really? I'd like to think loving spirits who confront many shadows as we mature. To me, bullies represent our shadows, those aspects of our common soul of humanity that are not of the light, pure and divine. Now I'm going to flip the discussion and look at it from another angle. Is it possible that bullies serve as teachers? It's paradoxical to accept that our adversaries are possibly our teachers. In retrospect, my experiences with bullies taught me a great deal about compassion and kindness. Now I am at the point of gratitude for all the shadow archetypes that became my teachers. I'm not sure whether bullies ever see the light, so to speak. Maybe their life purpose is to teach what pain is. Maybe we are taught to, quote, see through a glass darkly, quote, on our journey to find out who we really are. The German poet René Maria Rilke endured bullying when he was a young boy forced to attend a military school. His 5 years there were intolerable. As an adult, he recalled those years as giving him, quote, the feeling of one single, terrible damnation, end quote. He felt deeply lonely and harassed. To escape the bullies, he would become ill and go to the infirmary where he wrote poems. The deep suffering stirred in him to write the Book of Hours, Love Poems to God, in stages over a matter of years. These poems were so sacred to him that he kept them secret. He said he received these prayers spontaneously from God. His prayers teach that we humans are here on earth to help others and the world. Simply that. Our holding the space of love will bring God into being and co-create the divine on earth. This prayer by Rilke is from the Book of Monastic Life in the Book of Hours. Rilke says, "Our hands shake as we try to construct you, block on block, but you, cathedral, we deeply perceive. Who can bring you to completion? What's Rome? It crumbled. What is the world? We are destroying it. Before your towers can taper to spires, before we can assemble your face from the piles of mosaic. Yet, sometimes in dreams, I take in your expanse from its deepest beginnings up to the rooftop's glittering ridge. And then I see it is my mind that will fashion and set the last piece in place." The co-creation ends up being a personal choice. Our consciousness connects God to our earthly constructs. We build the cathedral, quote, from the pieces of mosaic, end of quote. The shattered world we leave in the wake of our growing up to who we truly are. Back to Naomi Shihab Nye's poem, Kindness, which I read earlier. What do we have to give up? What do we have to learn? In my reading of the poem, I think she is saying, we have to give up attachments, our egos. Every attachment must be released. We are in a daze, unaware that, quote, between the ridges of kindness, end of quote, there are shadows, much like those between valleys. We cannot learn about kindness unless we empathize with the pain and loss experienced by others, such as the deceased Indian in the white poncho. We must honor the shadows, sorrow and suffering, as friends, for they are both, quote, deep things, part of our DNA, and they are necessary companions if we are to return to our root, the womb of compassion. She ends her poem with, quote, like a shadow or a friend, quote, kindness can be both a shadow and a friend because kindness has its shadows. Everything can be experienced in degrees of polarities on a continuum. On one side, we encounter benevolence and mercy, and on the other, we suffer cruelty and animosity. The challenge is to honor the space in which everything exists, so as to attain equilibrium. The key is forgiveness of self and others. That is, if we add Rilke's message, the construct of the divine, love, grace, mercy, the safety and protection of compassion is our true home. This poem I wrote is dedicated to all young people contemplating suicide because of bullying. Be you. You are the light, but not well understood. You are maligned and mocked just because of your courage to dance and sing your story. Stand in your truth. Our mother, Gaia, supports you. Feel her pulse beneath your feet and in your heart. Fear traps empathy and compassion for itself. Your songs are so needed at this time. Some have never heard the music of the spheres from which we are cast as stars. Your light is ancient gold. Open to it in your song and dance. Blaze like no other star, as though dark matter itself could cast shadows over all time. This your offering, this will save us all. Thank you for listening. This is Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul with Barbara Leonhard, host, producer, writer. You can find my poetry on WordPress at Extraordinary Sunshine Weaver blog. And I shared my poems Cocoon Street Anywhere USA and BU. My gratitude to Naomi Shihab Nye, whose poem Kindness can be found in her volume of poems from Words Under the Words, Selected Poems, copyright 1995. By Naomi Shihab Nye, reprinted on poets.org with the permission of the author. You can also hear her read the poem on YouTube. My gratitude to Rainier Maria Rilke's beautiful Prayers in the Hour, Prayers in the Book of Hours, Love Poems to God, translated by Anita Barros and Johanna Macy, Riverhead Books, 2005. This book is the 100th anniversary edition, which contains Rilke's original German text. I also quoted Emily Dickinson, If I Could Stop One Heart from Breaking, found on poetryhunter.com. And if you would like to contribute poetry to this podcast, you may submit it to me in a Word document attached in an email to me at milosmom@gmail.com. meelosmom@gmail.com. On the subject line, indicated is a submission to this podcast. I can fit it into a theme. In the email, include any pertinent information on yourself and publications you want me to promote, especially for the poem or poems submitted. Unfortunately, there are no monetary compensations, just my gratitude and recognition for you. My prayers go out to Izzy Dix, the young girl who took her life as a result of bullying. Her poem, I Give Up, as I said, was published in Daily Mail Online. I used a picture of Izzy as the image for this podcast. Again, thank you for joining me. Just leave your cup on the table and I'll take care of it. Remember, you'll always have a friend here, and that you too can write your own poetic memoir.